afternoon, aren't we? Yes. Good afternoon. Thank you, Jennifer, for the introduction. It is a privilege to be here today, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you all. We know that cattlemen have a vested interest in protecting the environment. Rather than take a heavy-handed approach to industry regulation, we at the EPA, under the Trump administration, have focused our efforts on putting into place practical, environmentally protective policies for U.S. farmers, ranchers, and livestock producers. Under President Trump's leadership, EPA has worked to provide long-term certainty and a workable regulatory environment for U.S. agriculture across the board. For example, we are ending the long-standing agency practice of sue and settle. I think that's worth an applause. We are actively encouraging market-based water quality trading. We finalized a rule exempting producers from having to report routine farm animal waste emissions. I think that's worth an applause, too. And this week, we approved a new use for herbicide in Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, and Arizona to control large brush on rangeland, providing a useful tool in restoring land to native vegetation. We also repealed the Obama administration's costly and burdensome 2015 Waters of the U.S. rule. If you didn't spontaneously applause at that one, I was going to reinstate it. Thank you. And just 2 weeks ago, we announced our new definition of waters of the United States in a rule that we call the Navigable Waters Protection Rule, fulfilling President Trump's promise to provide the clarity and certainty that the ag community deserves. I want to read the name of the rule again, because you have on the one hand what people have been calling for years, Waters of the U.S. What the Clean Water Act requires is for us to regulate the navigable waters of the United States. So our rule's name is the Navigable Waters Protection Rule. What has happened over the last 40 years is that the scope of the navigable waters of the U.S. definition, has been expanded by administrations and by the courts to be much broader than what we believe the original intention of the Clean Water Act was in the 1970s. After five decades of constant litigation and uncertainty, our new rule significantly curtails the all-too-familiar practice of people having to hire teams of attorneys to tell them how to use their own land. Over many decades and multiple administrations, federal regulators and the courts have expanded the reach of the Waters of the U.S. definition, moving from waters a commercial vessel can navigate to isolated wetlands and channels that only flow when it rains. The Obama administration's 2015 rule was the most recent in a long list of actions that expanded the federal government's reach under the Clean Water Act with its WOTUS definition. The 2015 rule faced an onslaught of litigation by states representing more than 75% of the nation's land mass and was held unlawful in the courts. This litigation created a confusing regulatory patchwork across the country of states subject to different versions of the regulations. When the Obama administration put forward their 2015 definition, they claimed it was in the interest of water quality, but it was really about power. Power in the hands of the federal government over farmers, ranchers, developers, landowners. Our 2019 repeal of the 2015 definition put an end to the Obama administration's power grab. The Navigable Waters Protection Rule will establish national consistency and provide greater certainty to states and landowners. It reflects considerable stakeholder engagement, including approximately 620,000 comments that we received. many from people here in this room, and I want to thank you for the comments that you gave us. They helped guide the final rule that we finalized 2 weeks ago. When we proposed the rule in December of 2018, I outlined three overarching principles that are now reflected in the final product. First, property owners should be able to understand the definition for themselves. As simple as that sounds, that is not the way the EPA or the federal government had approached this over the last 30 to 40 years. Two, that the EPA and the Army Corps have clearly defined the difference between federally protected waterways and state protected waterways for the first time. And three, that we are providing the certainty the American public needs in a manner that will be upheld by the courts. In developing this rule, we follow the language of the Clean Water Act and the relevant Supreme Court decisions. The North Dakota Department of Agriculture's assessment of the 2015 rule found that approximately 80% of the waters and wetlands in North Dakota would have fallen under federal jurisdiction. The Missouri Farm Bureau estimated that over 95% of the state's land area could be subject to the 2015 rule. And in Iowa, that estimate rose to 97%. And in Pennsylvania, that number was a shocking 99%. This despite the fact that these and all states have their own protections for waters within their borders, and many states already regulate more broadly than the federal government. Under the 2015 rule, more landowners across the U.S. would have been forced to obtain a federal permit to exercise control over their own property. And today, my hope is that farmers, ranchers, livestock producers across the country can refocus their livelihoods on their livelihoods instead of meeting with consultants and lawyers. President Trump understood the incredible burden that regulatory uncertainty was having on our country, and he promised to fix it. In fact, he believes this so much that it was one of the first achievements outlined in his State of the Union speech on Tuesday. Did you all see the State of the Union Tuesday? He mentioned the regulatory relief at the beginning. If you didn't get a chance to see it or read it, you don't bother to ask Nancy Pelosi for her copy. Under President Trump's leadership, EPA and the Army Corps have delivered on this promise. Our Navigable Waters Protection Rule protects the nation's navigable waters while rebalancing the relationship between the federal government and the states in managing land and water resources. Together with existing state and tribal regulations and local governmental programs, our rule provides a network of coverage for our nation's water resources in accordance with the Clean Water Act. Our final rule identifies four clear categories of waters that are federally regulated. First, the territorial seas and traditional navigable waters. Second, perennial and intermittent tributaries to those waters. Three, certain lakes, ponds, and impoundments. And four, wetlands adjacent to the previous three. The final rule also details what are not waters of the United States. And this was a first. We thought it was just as important to define what is a water of the U.S. as it is to define what is not a water of the U.S. And what is not included are features that only contain water in direct response to rainfall, not a water of the U.S. Groundwater, not a water of the U.S. Many ditches, including most roadside and farm ditches, are not waters of the U.S. I'm going to wait for the applause on that one. We excluded your ditches. And we also excluded farm and stock watering ponds. We excluded waste treatment systems and also prior converted cropland. So we've taken a lot into account, not just with the cattlemen, and I appreciate the comments, but also the Farm Bureau, the various state Farm Bureaus, the National Farm Bureau, and other agricultural groups across the country. We heard your complaints, we took them to heart, and we have defined not only what is a water of the U.S., but also what is not, taking your concerns and issues into account. And I really hope you take a good look at our final rule, and it meets with your wishes and requirements. We also provided stronger clarification in the preamble of the rule on the factors that define wetlands, and we provided additional clarification on traditional navigable waters. What makes navigable water protection rules so well crafted, in part, is because of the comments that we receive from all of our stakeholders. After 50 years of environmental protection, the EPA is actually 50 years old this year, we know that making progress requires strong cooperation and coordination between Washington, D.C. and the states. States already have a robust network of regulations that protect their state waterways. And our Navigable Waters Protection Rule, together with these state efforts and other federal programs, like the Great Lakes Program, the Everglades Restoration Efforts, the Gulf Coast Restoration Efforts, will continue to ensure that America's waters are protected. And they're already among the best in the world, and we want to make sure that they remain strong while giving states and tribes the flexibility and certainty to manage their waters in ways that best protect their natural resources and local economies. We look forward to continuing our close cooperation with our state partners as we make progress together for a stronger future. Another important rule for the livestock community was finalized last May, and that was to amend the emergency release notification rules under the Emergency Planning Community Right to Know Act, or EPCRA, adding a reporting exemption for air emissions from animal waste at farms. In 2018, Congress exempted animal waste emissions from reporting under CERCLA, the Superfund program, but they did not do it under EPCRA. So to ensure regulatory consistency, we undertook a rulemaking to clarify and codify the livestock exemption under both statutes. Routine emissions from animal waste on farms are not environmental emergencies. And the first responders agreed that they should not have been included in the reporting requirements. Doing so would give America's farmers and ranchers much needed certainty by eliminating an onerous and unnecessary reporting requirement. Not only did the farmers ask for this change, but so did the emergency responders. They told us that they were getting too many reports from farmers that they didn't need or want. So it was not necessary, and we thought it was important to step forward to help all of you, as well as the emergency responders. And we were also concerned that the reporting information submitted by farmers could have been used by third parties in litigation, which is not the purpose of a federal regulation. So we acted to end this confusion and provide greater certainty to our farmers and our emergency responders. This has been our approach across the board under President Trump, and we are making tremendous progress ending regulatory overreach and providing greater certainty. To date, under President Trump's leadership, EPA has finalized 51 deregulatory actions, saving Americans an estimated $6.5 billion in regulatory costs. That's just from the EPA. We have an additional 45 actions in development projected to save billions more that we will finalize before the end of this year. And a recent report found that EPA exceeded the deregulatory goals of President Trump's two-for-one executive order, that we have to repeal two regulations for every new regulation we put in place. In fact, we are the leading agency on the two-for-one. As a result of these efforts, the economy is the strongest it's been in years. Unemployment rates are at a 50-year low. Americans nationwide, including those in economically distressed opportunity zones, are benefiting from direct investment in their communities. And most importantly, all of this is happening where we keep our land, air, and water clean and safe for all Americans. We are modernizing EPA's water quality trading policies to take advantage of emerging technologies and facilitate broader adoption of market-based programs. Our new policy proposals aim to simplify and give more flexibility to states, tribes, and stakeholders looking to develop market-based programs or to generate or use nutrient reduction credits. We're also developing a national water reuse action plan to accelerate water recycling, as well as encourage innovation and development of technology to improve waste management. This past November, I traveled to Israel, where they do a tremendous job of recycling their water. Now, to be honest, I met with four different ministers in Israel, and each one gave me a different percentage. They recycle somewhere between 88 and 95% of their water, depending which minister you ask on which day you ask. We recycle less than 10% of our water nationwide here in the United States, and we need to do a much better job of recycling our water and reusing it. And we are also awarding agricultural grants through EPA's Gulf of Mexico program to improve water quality, habitat, and environmental education in the Gulf of Mexico watershed. In recent months, PFAS chemicals have come to the forefront of public concern. Are people familiar with PFAS chemicals? These are the chemicals such as Scotchgard, Teflon in pans, Gore-Tex clothing. There's over 600 different PFAS chemicals in the PFAS family. We had a problem in New Mexico with a dairy herd the year before last where they were contaminated with PFAS in the drinking water. So we are now focusing on that and on the impact of these chemicals on the agriculture and, in particular, livestock community. A few months ago, we announced the availability of almost $5 million in funding to expand our research in managing PFAS in agriculture and rural America, and we're working hand-in-hand with USDA to try to address this problem before it becomes more widespread. These new research grants will help identify potential impacts of PFAS to farms, ranches, and rural communities. We want to make sure that decision-makers at the federal, state, and local levels have the best science available to make informed decisions. The deadline to apply for these grants is this coming Tuesday. So if a land grant or school that you work with plans to apply, please remind them that they need to get their application in by Tuesday. Lastly, I want to update you on where we are with nominations to the EPA's Farm, Ranch, and Rural Communities Committee. In November, we announced a solicitation for roughly 30 nominees who would serve 2 to 3 years terms, providing independent policy advice, information, and recommendations to the EPA administrator on a range of environmental issues and policies. This committee has not been widely used in the past, and we want to reinvigorate it and make sure that they are there to provide the administrator with the advice that the administrator needs on making agriculture livestock decisions. As I said, we'll be soliciting for 2 to 3 year terms. It's my full intention to make sure that I'm there for the next 3 years at least to receive that advice from the committee. So I strongly encourage you to take a look at that process and make sure that we have people representing you nominated to that committee. One of our key priorities at EPA is to strengthen and solidify our relationships with agricultural stakeholders and rural communities by ensuring the agency is well informed on how its decisions impact rural America. The nomination period closed on December 31st, and we received dozens of statements of interest from a broad array of people. And we're in the selection process now, and we plan to announce the nominees this spring, and we will have producers represented on that committee. I want to thank you all for joining me today. I want to thank you for inviting me to this meeting. And on behalf of President Trump and his administration, I want to thank you for your continued engagement and what you do for the American public. You do not get enough recognition, from the American public as far as what you are doing to protect the environment. You are the true stewards of the land. I get that. I appreciate that. President Trump gets that. So I want to thank you all for what you do. And again, thank you for inviting me to be part of your meeting today.